privileged to be here talking with Sister Arlene Mills and the ultrasound. I wonder if we could, first, while you get yourselves together, we're looking at a particular type of music which many would say has its roots in Philadelphia. They tend to trace the origins back to a talented black minister by the name of Charles Albert Tinley.
That's right.
Who was pastor of the Methodist Church there, Tinley Temple.
Tinley Temple.
In Philadelphia, early 1900s. And, of course, in 1920, Thomas Dorsey caught the flame and has carried it. James Cleveland, Al Green, etc. I'm Bill Wiggins from Indiana University. I'm going to try to say as little as possible and let these people talk. I wonder first if we could, Arlene, if you could just introduce the group, or at least have them introduce themselves. They seem to be grown.
They are grown, and I think they can introduce themselves, starting on my left.
David Winslow.
Give us a little something about you, Dave, what you've done, you know.
Well, I started playing piano around the age of 14. I took an interest in it, and since then, I've...
Hey, Dave, why don't you take it?
Since then, I've traveled extensively and played for a number of groups, and I think the greatest thing that I did was when I went overseas with the group for about 4 or 5 years, and we did gospel, and to see how they really appreciate gospel is really a sight to see, because they don't have it that often. And I think that was the greatest thing to me that the Lord allowed me to do. And playing for a number of groups in the city, I now play for the Philadelphia Mass Choir of the James Cleveland Gospel Music Workshop of America. And other than that, I'm more or less freelancing.
Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right.
Oh, I have a group of my own. I forgot. Thank you. The David Winslow Singers, and they're doing pretty good right now.
Okay.
Next.
My name is Bill Speaks, and I'm the drummer for the Ultrasounds. I also play a couple other instruments, but, you know, nothing too great.
My name is Lisa Speaks. I'm a singer with the Ultrasounds. I'm also a musician. I play for my church, the El Shaddai Baptist Church in Philadelphia. I've sung with a few other groups in Philadelphia, but now I'm just primarily with the Ultrasound.
Good afternoon. I am Ethel Smith. I am also a singer of the Ultrasound. I am the sister of Evangelist Arlene Mills, and I've basically sang all my life. And I just enjoy, I think, my most rewarding experience at this point with singing gospel is being able to minister through song to someone. You know, it's always something that you could say that lifts someone else's spirits or something that they've been needing to hear. And that's where I get my greatest satisfaction in singing gospel to an audience.
Yeah, we get the back row now.
My name is Crystal Magruder. I am also a musician, a singer, a songwriter. I play for a number of groups in Philadelphia. I've played for some, and I play for some now. I don't have much to say. I don't know what to say. This is my first time. So y'all have to bear with me, okay?
All right, we're saving the best for last, and now we will ask the leader of the group, who's had a very distinguished gospel singing career, to tell us who she is and what she is about. Arlene?
Well, first of all, at this point, I'm Arlene Mills, and I'm pastoring at the Celestial Tabernacle Church of God in Philadelphia. And I started in gospel music at the age of 11, actually. When I was 6 years old, I was being groomed to be a concert pianist. And by the time I was 11 years old, I looked at my mother and I said, "That's not it. Nah, that's not it." And my mother said to me, "What do you mean that's not it?" I said, "That's not the kind of music I want to play." So we talked with my teacher, and my teacher told my mother that if I didn't want to be a concert pianist, I would not achieve that. And so he recommended me to another music teacher who was a woman. And when we went there, she asked me what I wanted to play. And I said, I want to play. At that time, I didn't know about being a Christian. I only knew about religious stuff. So I said, I wanted to play religious music. So she handed me a Baptist hymn book, which houses a lot of Charles Tinley's hymns that he wrote. And I turned to, I will never forget, Jesus Keep Me Near the Cross. And I began to play that particular hymn. And when I finished, I was waiting on the teacher to say something, good, bad, indifferent, and it was silence. And when I looked around, the tears were streaming down her face. And she said to my mother, I can't teach her what she already has. And so I started playing for churches. First church I played for was a great aunt and her little gospel chorus. And I started playing for them, and throughout my years, I majored in music in school, but I only did it so that I might be able to impart something to someone else, because I really wasn't interested in learning what they had to teach as far as theory and practice was concerned, but I found it to be very helpful. I wasn't singing at that time, I was only playing. And then as I moved on, I started to play for little groups and that were singing, and I wound up playing for a group called the Daughters of Zion. And it was with this group that I did my first solo bit. And I'll never forget it, after I had sang this song became requested quite often, and it had been a song that was sung by the Caravans. I was trying to think of what the song was, but anyhow, they said I sound like I was singing a love song, a bedroom song, and so everywhere I went, they would request for me to do this particular song. And like in all things, it got so until the leader of the group decided, wait a minute, she's getting too much publicity, so they tried to squash me and tell me I couldn't sing anymore. It was at this time there was a young man who we used to laugh at when he tried to play, and because he was not a musician, actually, but he would bam on the piano, and he would try to, you know, and he would, and in some holiness churches, it didn't matter what you played, long as you was, you know, playing. And so this is what he was doing, and it was at this time that he came to me and said, I'm forming a group. Would you like to be a part? And I said, yes. First I said, let me think about it, because I did have children at the time that I was raising. I'd be gotten married and had these babies, you know, and I was carrying them on the hip and dragging them by the hand and, you know, everywhere that I went. So then finally I said, yes, I was getting tired of this group I was playing for because they weren't giving me an opportunity. I found out I loved to sing, and they weren't giving me an opportunity, so I joined up with Johnny Thompson. And we began to sing. It was I and several guys when we first organized. I was the only girl in the group. And then he changed up, and it got two girls and two guys, and till finally we wound up with all gals and just him. And we were pretty good, and, you know, we were really hard-hitting group. And so the Lord did bless finally. And open a door whereby we were afforded an opportunity to travel across seas and to go to the European countries. Of course, that was exciting to me. At that time, I really didn't have a lot of inspiration. My inspiration basically came from the Angelic Singers, who was an old group. And I remember the Ward Singers and the Davis Sisters, the Dewdrop Singers, the original Dewdrop Singers, who did not come out of the Fire Baptized Holiness Church. And they were the groups that would come together every fourth Monday night for Joy Night. Now, that was originated back there in the early 40s, around 1940 or 41, when Joy Night was originated in Philadelphia. And I would live for that fourth Monday night because of the music that came forth. At that time, it was not a competing thing. It was just because people wanted to come together. They did not come together to compete. But as I moved on in the gospel field, I learned that people were more or less in it to compete against one another. And so when the opportunity of going across seas presented itself, it was like something new. It was refreshing. And as David has said, we have found that in traveling over in the European countries, the people there who actually decide to make a change in their lives and to accept Christ in their lives really live differently from the people that say they love the Lord here in the States. And it was an experience for us to watch how these people really worshiped the Lord and praised Him. Up until that point, I really was not in tune with the praise that we should be giving the Lord. And I learned how from the people really in Sweden. Wouldn't you say Sweden was the country that really taught us what it really meant to give your whole self to the Lord? And we had some dynamite spiritual experiences while we were in Sweden. And I believe that was the turning point for me. Even though before that I knew the Lord, at least I thought I did, and I had been in the church all my life, and I thought I was going to heaven because I went to church on Sunday. But I found out through this ministry in song that each song holds a special message for somebody that sits in that audience. And so I became very much aware at that, much more aware at that point of what the ministry in song really meant. And I came back to Philadelphia with a different outlook on my Christian living. It was at that point the Lord started to deal with my heart, and I began to look at the group that I was with. And even though we talked about the Lord and we dealt with each other's problems and that kind of thing, there was something that was missing. And about 1977, I think, was my last trip across seas with the Johnny Thompson Singers. Mm-hmm. I came out from that group, and for about a year I remained obsolete and did nothing actually with singing. But one day while sitting, a voice spoke and said, "You need to sing. Don't stop singing." And so a group was formed, and at that time we were called the Sounds of Joy. And we got to really got together just to do a program for somebody who wanted some singers. And we went along like that, and we decided to change the name to Ultrasound. And when Ultrasound, we worked together for a little while, and then that group decided they wanted to get big-headed and swell-headed. And so we broke up. But my goddaughter and I, who was singing with me at the time, because she really wanted to sing for the Lord, I would ask the Lord to do something about the group. And I told her, just hang in there. If the Lord wants us to sing, He'll give us what we need. And one day I was on the avenue going to pay my gas bill. And I was used to doing a tent revival every year in Philadelphia. And this young lady was a member of the choir that worked under the tent. And I ran into a mother who says, "I sure wish there was something for my daughter to do, because she's doing nothing now." And I said, "You mean she's not singing? She's not working for the Lord?" She says, "She's just doing nothing. I don't know what's wrong with her." I said, "Well, tell her to call me." And we got in touch with each other, and there she is. Not only is she a singer of the Ultrasound, but she is now my daughter-in-law, Lisa. We got Lisa engaged, and I was sitting at my mother's one day, and my mother and I were talking, and I said to her, I said, "Well, we need somebody else to sing in the group, but I'm going to wait on the Lord to send them." About that time, the door opened, and my baby sister walked in and came into the kitchen. And before we could say anything, she said, "I want to sing. I want to sing for the Lord. Now, I got to find me somewhere to sing." And I looked up and I said, "Well, thank you, Lord." And there she is, my baby sister, Ethel. Well, we needed a drummer. And who better to ask was my son Billy to play drums for us. But now he didn't really want to because we didn't have a bass player. He said, if you get a bass player, I'll play the drums. So we were blessed and we got a bass player who is unfortunately not with us today. But we got a bass player and then Billy started playing drums. And he's been with us ever since. And of course, he is the husband of Lisa. And they are the proud parents of now BJ, who is Billy Jr., and he's 14 months old.
Hey for BJ.
Well, I have a habit of taking and making musicians and helping them get started and sending them out. And we had a musician, a young man who was my godson, who still is my godson. But he's married now, and of course he can't devote his time to ultrasound. And so we got the opportunity to come and be in this festival. And I could think of no other person to give this opportunity to than, and he is like my godson, really. And he says, unfortunately. Someone said to him yesterday, she looked like she's gonna hit you. He said, yeah, and she will too. But this young man, I'm grateful to God for because he's God's gift. God has given him a God-given talent. And I tell you, I enjoy working with David simply because he can keep you cracking up, you know, when you feel kind of low in spirits and that kind of thing. David comes along and he has something to make you laugh and forget all about your problems. And I tell you, he's very good for the group. And he has his own group, and we're not going to take him from him, although I wish I could keep him around. But he says, I can't do that. But we are grateful he could make it to this festival with us, and that's David Winslow.
All right. And now you know how ultrasound has come into being. But I think these young ladies are also very, very, very talented. I think for those of you who have not heard them, when they do perform, they perform much of their own material. And who is it that, I know yesterday, there was at least one song that was performed that was written by a member of the group. What was the song? Does anybody?
Lisa's song. Lisa, tell about your song.
Tell us about your song,
tell about
Lisa.
Your song.
She had the lead solo and then also, yeah, she wrote it. That's what I'm saying, yeah.
Well, I was raised in the church, but I don't want to knock any denomination, but I was raised in a Reformed Episcopal church. And we were just taught, you know, you read your Bible and you come to Sunday school and you go home and you're finished, you know. And you come on Sunday and you do it all over again, you go home and you're finished. And one day I was watching a religious program on TV, and they were talking about healing and how the Lord did this and that, and I turned it off. I said, I don't even want to watch that. That's crazy stuff. You know, nothing works like that. But then one day I was watching the show, and it dawned on me, people do live like this. And believe it or not, I wrote the song, and it took me about 5 minutes. I sat down and wrote the whole song. You know, it just came to me that all of a sudden God was real. You know, I went to a new church, but, you know, it dawned on me finally that God wasn't something that you just come to church on Sunday and you read your Bible school stories and then you go home. You know, it all of a sudden became real to me, and I wrote the words. A little bit of it was, I used to worship a God I couldn't feel. I couldn't see him. I couldn't hear him. To me, he wasn't real. And he goes on to explain, you know, how I did all the things that people tell you you're supposed to do when you go to church. But you have to learn for yourself that God is real. Mm-hmm. And that's how I came to write that song.
All right. And if you come back this afternoon, you will get a chance to hear that. We have another songwriter on the end down here. I mean, she's on the back row. But going back to the back row, could you, a song that perhaps, you know, that you have composed, I'm sure.
Well, she wrote the music for that.
Oh, you wrote the music. You all collaborated. You did the words. And all right. Well, tell me, how do you compose? Or tell me about some of your efforts.
Well, what I did, Lisa said she needed music for her song. So we sat down to the piano, and we did a number of chords or, you know, arrangements, and it didn't take. But then when she decided to fit her words into the music, I just happened to sit and just start playing. She said, well, let me try this. And there was the song.
Mm-hmm. What about Everybody's Talking About Jesus?
Okay, now with the song that Jenny sings, everybody's, this is Jenny.
The flip side of the record.
The flip side of the record. Everybody's Talking About Jesus and Me. I had had an experience with my friends. You know, people who you think are your friends really aren't. But I'm sure all of you know this. But I was going to church. All I knew was church. All I wanted to do was be in church and to worship the Lord in the fullness, right? I'm getting scared.
No, go
ahead. I would go to church, come home, sleep and go to school. So when I start talking about church, my friends didn't want to hear that. They were too busy out here doing their own thing. Okay, when I didn't want to do it, then they called me a fanatic. They talked about me and asked me what God was I serving. He don't act like this. And I sat down. One day I got to myself, and it hurt me because someone said something to me, and I didn't expect it from them. Coming from them, no. Because they knew about church, but yet they were doing their own thing on the side. I sat, I cried, and I prayed. I asked God to give me some words to let people know that no matter how much you are talked about, don't worry about the people. My Bible tells me that greater is your reward in heaven, okay? Now, people I didn't know, they were saying everything about me. That they don't find out about you, they make up. Mm-hmm. And I got tired of that too. So I said, and the words came to me, I belong to Jesus. He belongs to me. My friends don't understand why I love this man. He set my soul free. And this happened when I was about 14 years old. And he gave me the victory. What I'm saying here is that he made me conquer. He helped me to conquer the hurt that I was feeling from my friends. And the song goes on and goes on. But that song was arranged through, what you call it?
Through your own experience.
Through my own experience, thank you, honey. Through my own experience.
All right. Do we have another song? Do we have a composer here? Do we have anyone else who has written, composed a song here? We're pointing at somebody.
We did one yesterday, Be Still and Know That I Am God. And when the Lord allowed me to put the group together, I had asked the Lord for a specific sound for the group. What I really wanted was the old sound. I wanted something that would reach deep into the hearts of people when they heard it. And yet I did not want to sound like somebody else, because we have a tendency a lot of times to sing other people's music, and you can't get away from sounding like them because it is written for them. And so I was sitting down one day, and I thought, let me back up. I used to write music. When I first got with the Johnny Thompson Singers, I used to write music. Of course, none of that music ever was used because of the young man's ego. He never wanted, you know, and I say what I say because I can back it up. He never wanted to use someone else's music. And so I was afraid, after being with him so long, that if I began to write music, I would begin to sound exactly like him. And so I was praying and asking the Lord, please don't let me do that. And the song that I came up with shocked me, because I've never been one to lean on contempt sounds. And I didn't stay with my music long enough to really do orchestration like I would have liked to. But when I sat down to the piano and began to put this thing together, it came out because the Lord was speaking to me when I really read the words back to myself. It was telling me to wait on him where the group was concerned. Don't try to do it of yourself, because we had tried that before and it didn't work. And so the song I wrote was Be Still and Know I Am God. Be still and know I am God. And many times we don't do that. We're so busy into a chaotic world that we don't know what the Lord wants us to do. We don't know what God's will is for our lives. And so he wanted me to be still. And I found out, because when I wrote this, it was like 4 o'clock in the morning. And that's where the line comes from, in the quiet of the morn, in the stillness of the dawn, is the best time to talk to the Lord, because there's nothing to disturb you. If you really want to talk to him, wake up early in the morning. And it went on, as the verse went on, to say, I can talk to God wherever I am. It doesn't make any difference what part of the world I am in, because I had learned that. And he's there for me even when I'm feeling at my lowest ebb, and that's where the word blue comes from, because putting lowest ebb didn't fit. So I said, whenever I'm blue. And if he speaks to me, certainly he can talk with you. And that's the way that song was born. It was born out of the Lord really speaking to my heart early in the morning and telling me to wait. And he would give me the group that he wanted me to have. And I'm very happy with all of them.
Okay, I hope that you do come out and hear Pastor Mills Ultrasound perform on the stage this afternoon. And also, as she mentioned, they do have copies of the 45 record for sale at the it's the white tent.
Straight down, there's a white tent, you will see. And it's only $1.05. Where can you buy a 45 for that nowadays?
So pick up the come to the concert and pick up the record and go home and rest from yesterday, as we're going to do tonight. We want to thank the members of Ultrasound and let them go and get themselves ready or relax until they come on, which is at what time?
2:45.
They will be on that stage, the performance stage, at 2:45. We hope to see you there. Thank you again. Good evening, afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the second workshop. We're here with members of Groove Fire Groove, the social organization from the University of Pennsylvania. Six high-stepping collegians. What we have been, I don't know how many of you have seen it, but you're on a day at what, 3:15? 3:15 to 3:45. They'll give you some examples of the male dancing, the stepping type of competition that goes on during festive occasions at college. Such as homecoming, or I think the pin relays. But I'm not going to talk anymore. I'm Bill Wiggins from Indiana University. I want the gentlemen to introduce themselves to you, tell you a bit about where they're from and their majors, and then we'll get right into that whole tradition of stepping. So we can start. Let's start at this end, Jeff, because we know it would gravitate back that way anyway. So let's start on this end.
Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Jeff Edwards. I'm a junior of the Wharton School of the University of Pennsylvania. My hometown is Newark, New Jersey. I'm glad to be here.
Hello, I'm Glenn Glasgow. I'm originally from San Antonio, Texas. I'll be a junior in the fall, majoring in finance, School of Wharton.
Hello.
My name is Terry Henderson. I'm a junior in the Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania. My major is marketing. And I'm originally from New York City.
Carlton Yearwood, I'm economics major, senior at the University of Pennsylvania. I'm from New York City.
My name is Eric Rutherford. I'm going into my senior year at University of Pennsylvania. I'm an economics major, and I'm from West Philadelphia.
What they did not do for you this time is give you their nom de guerre. In other words, each of these gentlemen has a sobriquet by which they go. Would you let us come back this way? Tell us, first of all, Sir Rap-A-Lot, what it, how you get it, and so forth, what yours is.
Well, excuse me, you in the back. Hi, y'all. Why don't y'all come on over? Come on over, and let's hear something about stepping. How many people know something about stepping? If you're just standing around and you want to hear about stepping, come on over. If you're just wondering what's going on, hey, we invite you all to come on over and talk with us, ask some questions, and find out a little bit more about what we do. Glenn, come here. Come here, Glenn. Glenn Henson is the man responsible for us being here right now.
Hey, we're here. The show must go on.
Come on over. Come on.
How about you run over and tell them to come
How about
over
a free
here?
Step show right now?
Ladies and gentlemen, I need volume. Ladies and gentlemen, standing in the back, come on over here. We've got a lot of seats up front, and we're about to present to you a show which is both educational, entertaining, and erudite. That's right, the three E's all right together. Come right up front. Ladies and gentlemen, come right up. We've got a lot of room left, a lot of time, and a lot of good stepping, a lot of good talk. All right.
Now back to the original question, brother.
The original question was, how do we get the names that we go by? Some of us have nicknames. Matter of fact, all of us have nicknames. Mine is Sir Rap-A-Lot, and as you see, I'm still talking, so it's quite becoming. we get them when we're pledging. And during the pledge period, you get a name which is characteristic of how you are while you're pledging. And if since I talked a lot, I like to entertain the potential fellowmen. They were the ones who were pledging us. So instead of being harassed, I'd like to carry, you know, a conversation or talk a lot, which I'm doing right now. So that's my line name, Rap-A-Lot.
Hello. All right. All right, my name is, my line name was E-Man because I tried to do everything, so they called me E-Man for everything. But we are social fellowship, and I stress that we're not a fraternity or any other type of club, and we call each other fellowmen, and that's very important to us, and I, you know, like everybody understand that. I hope if you do have a few questions about stepping or whatever, why we're up here or anything, please ask us because we will answer them so that you will know what we are about.
At times, my line name is Mr. T because my first name is Terry. But the line name that was given to me was Sir Squint because I used to squint a lot every time I answered questions. You might notice that now, but I don't mind it as much as people seem to think I do. He would have told you my line name anyway if I hadn't told you the truth.
You shouldn't tell stories, Terry.
My line name was Quick Draw, and I was quick to the draws, quick to do a lot of things, especially quick to leave and exit. So they gave me the line name Quick Draw.
You know, this is the part of the show I don't like, you know? We're telling each other's line names, and I have one, a new one, which is Mr. Smooth, but everyone doesn't like that name, so they want me to tell the real name, which they gave me.
Kermit, like on Sesame Street, Kermit. So that's what he's hesitating to say.
The reason they gave me that was because everyone's name is characteristic of their personality, and they somehow related my speech pattern where I used to. They said I shouted and talked like I was like Kermit or whatever.
Frogmouth.
Frogmouth, yeah, Frogmouth.
Well, you can see that there's a great deal of fellowship here. But with the stepping itself, I've noticed in the week and some days we've been together that you have a particular nomenclature for what you do. So you were yesterday, you were talking about freaking or freaking out or the lining or things of this sort. Obviously, you know, what are the basic steps or again, you know, what determines what?
Okay, when we step, it's not really freaking out. I mean, it's just a part. It's just a name to describe a certain portion of a step. Like, if we can have a demonstration, have two of the brothers get up and start doing one step, and then one may break off into another beat that sounds the same, but in actuality, it's exactly a different step. And that's what we mean by freaking. You can do certain steps off of one step, and it'll go and it'll be in the same beat rhythm. Like, Terry and Glenn are going to demonstrate the ultimate step right now. This is a step which we do a lot of freaking off of. You know, that word being, I mean, it could stand for just about anything, but I'll let them demonstrate.
You'll notice that they're keeping a regular beat right here. And when you see one person jump from out of that but maintaining the beat like Terry's doing right here,
right,
that's called freaking. But he keeps the beat at all times.
See, Glenn's doing another one. Glenn's slapping his legs now. That's another form of freaking. Staying on the same beat, going back into the original step. Carlton's going to get up and do something else for you. Susan. As you see, all the beats and rhythms come back into the same rhythm. So the freaks that Carlton's doing in the middle are in beat with Terry and Glenn at the same time. That's what's talked about when we say freaking. There are various forms of freaking. We can freak off of different steps. We can hear a song on the radio, hear a different beat. You can hum a beat. We could, you know, you do it in a shower, on the bus, you do it anywhere, basically.
Part of stepping is being able to keep these beats in your head. It's sort of like an instinct after a while. You start off by learning to count the beats, but after a while, you don't count the beats. It's just instinct. You learn how to move into the beats. It takes a while for that to develop.
Now there may be... Thank you. There may be other brothers from around the country who may come from different campuses and do different steps. But just as we, you know, as we're stepping right here, they may be able to join in with their particular steps because it fits the type of rhythm, that the beat that we have. So in a sense, you can say that everything is uniform, but it's totally unique in a sense.
Do we have any questions here as to what you have seen thus far? In other words, you have to sort of learn a basic cadence, rhythm, and then be able to improvise or, as they say, to freak off of that, utilizing the hands, the body, the chest, the thighs, and the feet even as a resonator. So this whole notion of polyrhythmic, you will see this afternoon. I mean, I don't know which particular one it is, but you've got one particular step in which you have the three different lines going with three different rhythms, and then they all come back in.
Yeah. There's a step called the fancy step that we do, and in actuality, we have two members doing one step, then the other two would be doing a different step, and the third one would be doing a different step, and then they'd all come in and blend together. And it'll be uniform at the end of the step. So there's a lot of syncopation and rhythm. It's just keeping it. I've been stepping for 3 years since I've been a member of the fellowship. And my line brother, I pledged with Carlton. He's been stepping for 3 years also. Terry and Jeff Jeff on the end, they've been stepping for 2 years, and Glenn, who was just up, has just been stepping for a couple of months. So, you know, it's you know, the dedication to get it down. But after you get it down, you sort of feel the rhythm, the beat. You can just jump in, and you know, not being shy is a big part of learning how to step, learning new steps. There were a couple of brothers down yesterday from Maryland Eastern Shore, and they just taught us a new step. We were over there trying to get it today, trying to get it down pat so we can take it back. And that's how it's transferred. That's how different steps are transferred throughout the country. And you know, so it's universal among brothers, you know, and people who can pick up the rhythm and just go with it. Like some of the performers up there, the tap dancers, they can pick up some of the steps that we do. The break dancers can pick up some of them because they can feel the sense of rhythm and make their own beat. It may be unique to what they feel, and you know, which is good because that's what it's all about. Everybody having their own unique rhythm and just expressing themselves that way.
Okay, there's also not only the movement of the feet and the rhythm of the hands and so forth, but there's some chants, there's some verbal part to it too. Is there any signifying? Is any verbal contest going on here? I mean, you all this is going on at once. But who are you all talking about? Or talking to or something?
Carlton.
Okay. Well, when we're stepping, we usually talk about other organizations, such as I call them non-fellowships because they're not fellowships like we are, but they're really fraternities, sororities. To the sororities, we always have something nice to say about the women. And about the men, we usually don't have too many nice things to say. But it's just a game, little game, while everybody does their own type of dance, you could call it. And it's just we just compete to see who's the best. I think we are. That's why we're here in Philly. I mean, D.C.
It's just a form of competition. You know, you play football, you play it under different rules. You step under different rules. You know, it's stepping. Stepping is a non-contact sport. All right. So, stepping, you have to use verbal communication. It's just along the same lines as football. Football, you tackle him. Your basketball, you put the ball in the hoop. Stepping, you step. You make a rhythm, and you chant certain things to compete with the other groups. And it's really competition for crowd response. So there may be some antics going on during the show, which may get the crowd really involved and get them chanting and clapping, and that's really what you want. You want the crowd to get, participate in what you're doing. As you'll see over at 3:15 today over on the other tent, you'll see.
There's been requested someone to show us a chant. I'm going to do a chant that we do that is not necessary. Directed towards anyone, it's like telling about a step and how it, you know, what it came to be from. It goes like this: stepping started in Africa and they called it dance. This step we do, Jeff, will make you move.
All right, Jeff is talking about a particular step which we do. It's called the Mambo Groove, and what he's doing now. Joe, come on over, Joe. Joe's one of our graduate brothers from Pennsylvania, and he's down for Sir Sinister. That's Joe's name. I don't know why, but I guess you have some idea. Joe's gonna demonstrate the mambo, and Jeff's gonna do the chant, and then you're gonna understand, you know, exactly what we mean by having a chant and someone stepping and doing it at the same time.
G5G, hit it. Now stepping started in Africa, and they called it dance. This step we do will make you move, put you in a trance. Step to the side and you will see just who we be. For we're those bad bold brothers of G5G. Now I say dance, you got to dance now. Mambo groove, I say dance, you got to dance now. Mambo groove, I say dance, you got to dance now. Mambo groove. I say dance,
everybody dance now.
Mambo groove,
freak time. Joe's demonstrating one of the freaks to the mambo groove.
He'll probably break into another one after this.
Hit the last one for him, Joe. Let's give him a hand.
Joe likes to Joe likes to make up different freaks. So what you seen was a Joe Jackson original. I assure you, I've never seen that before in my life. So you were there. You can say that you were there when we made up the new Freak to the Mama groove.
All right. I think, do we have any questions from the audience?
Some more.
They will do some more dancing at 3:15, and
a half hour show,
and we have the next workshop. I think it is now 2 o'clock, and the next workshop is coming on. But we do urge you to come back at 3:15. No, on the performance stage.
And for all the ladies, we have a step especially for you.
And so please come back, especially the ladies, for that. So we'll see you. Let's give them a hand again for coming out. Groove Fire Groove. See you at 3:15.